The MSU Children's Choir. The MSU Children's Choir under the direction of Kyle Zoich. Welcome back to Current State. This evening it's our live holiday special featuring the MSU Children's Choir. The piece you just heard, Unending Flame, by Paul Carey, Susan Stinson at the piano, and Yun Hong Chi on clarinet. I'll also point out we are live streaming the entire 59 minutes this evening at WKAR.org. You can see the choir and our guests at WKAR.org. I grew up hearing that before television, people used to sit around and watch the radio, and you can do that this evening and actually see something. So that's at WKAR.org. And I imagine somebody in our audience before the evening is through is will not be able to resist dialing it up on their mobile device instead of just looking up and watching the whole thing live. But that's life in the 21st century for you. More from the MSU Children's Choir throughout the hour. I'm Mark Bayshore. A Christmas Carol has become a beloved fixture of the holiday landscape. A more recent creation offers a modern, entertaining addendum to the Charles Dickens classic. In Jacob Marley's Christmas Carol, we learn more about the other half of the Scrooge and Marley team and what led Jacob Marley to play the critical role he did in Scrooge's redemption. The play runs through this Sunday. We're happy to have two of the actors from this Williamston Theater production with us. Mark Colson has the title role. The Charlotte native has been an actor for about 30 years, appearing in films and on stage and in TV, including appearances in Parks and Recreation, CSI New York, and AMC's Low Winter Sun. He's also an associate professor of media acting here at Michigan State. Welcome, Mark.
Thanks.
And Rosie Sullivan plays various parts, including that of the Boggle, an impish character that helps to redeem Jacob Marley. This is Rosie's first professional role. You're a senior at Michigan State University studying fine arts and acting.
Yep, I sure am.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Talk to us a little bit about the story, first of all, Mark. What's happening exactly in Jacob Marley's Christmas Carol?
Oh, well, you know, in the ordinary Christmas Carol, we don't get much sort of backstory as far as, you know, Marley's concerned. We know that he was sort of a character in line with Scrooge, right? That he had made some mistakes in life, that he was more interested in money than he possibly was in helping out his fellow man. But what this story goes back into is once he dies, how he is enlisted into helping to change Scrooge. And there's ulterior motives for it. It's sort of a mercenary act that he wants some redemption for himself as well. But we, sort of go into a darker side of, sort of Jacob Marley's character and just see what led him to the choices that he made, and that his fate is directly tied to Scrooge's fate as well.
So we learn a lot more about Marley.
Absolutely.
Are there other characters from A Christmas Carol in this production?
There is Scrooge. Scrooge is in it as well.
Okay.
Well, and it's kind
wouldn't
of.
Wouldn't be right if he
yeah,
weren't.
Yeah, right?
In
But it definitely explores the sort of relationship between Marley and Scrooge, and gives you the backstory of how all the ghost of Christmas present and past and future all comes into play, and how Jacob Marley has his role in it, and how the Boggle does.
Whose creation is this, anyway?
It's Tom Mueller. He created it in 1998, the Goodman Theater. It was a one-person version, which we're doing it with four people, and how he does it with one person, I have absolutely no idea, because it's sort of rough enough with four people up on stage. But yeah, it was Goodman Theater, 1998, so, you know, big venue there. And then in 2001, it was the Cincinnati Shakespeare Festival, and that was the first time that they did the four-person version.
I'm led to believe rehearsals were fairly intense for this. Is that true?
They were.
It seems like rehearsals would always be intense, but was this more intense than usual?
Yeah, definitely.
How come?
Well, I'm a student, so all I've ever been in has been student productions in high school and elementary school and middle school. And so jumping into this, first of all, it's a shorter process, so only 3 weeks of rehearsal, and then we go into previews, and then we go into our performances. And so it's a shorter rehearsal process, and then it's also a new form of theater, or not a new form, but it's a different form of theater than I'm used to, which is called reader's theater. So we are not only narrating the story, but we are also playing characters. So it's toggling between narrator and character.
So you've prepared a scene for us from the play. Set this up for us. What are we? Explain what we're about to hear here.
So Marley has just arrived in Purgatory, and he meets this little creature, the Boggle, who is going to be his guide to Purgatory. And he's basically the Boggle is showing him the different levels of hell, purgatory at this point, and Marley sees sort of what he's up against.
Okay.
So you'll hear us going back and forth between our characters and narration as well.
Okay, very good. This is from Jacob Marley's Christmas Carol.
The worst was the uppermost level. Here the anguish became silence and darkness and cold, and here each soul was completely, utterly alone. This was the level of despair. And from here, souls blinked out, disappeared as if a very small, dim candle had finally guttered out.
Where did they go?
Don't know, old thing. Nobody talks about it much. Maybe nowhere.
You mean they just vanish and reappear?
No, I mean they go nowhere. They cease to exist. They become no thing.
Sounds like a relief.
You might think that now, but no. This rejection, this utter annihilation. It's never discussed. Let's get away from here. Oh, something the matter?
Now go away.
Oh, not letting this depress you, are you? Come on, I have something else to show you.
No, no more. Show me where I am to go and I will go there, but leave me alone.
Sorry to insist, old pustule, but we're going home. The Boggle pulled him and they arrived. It was London. On a crisp market morning at the fish market in the Billingsgate. The streets and alleys close by the river were filled with people shouting, whistling, singing, and swearing men. The tremendous noise, the confusion, the din was awesome, and in a way, somehow splendid and grand. Disgusting, ain't it? Messy. How can they live like that, each in the other's face, each in the other's business, like some big, damn, noisy, meddling, intrusive family?
Why are we here? I don't see what's to be gained here. I've seen all this before.
Well, have you? Well, perhaps you've never seen this. And the boggle changed the scene.
Marley felt a bit dizzy, and as he blinked hard to regain his vision, the population before him doubled, tripled. For beside every man there stood a spirit, sometimes two or three, some watching in horror, others laughing, helping, whispering encouragement, all interested, caring, all intensely involved.
Crowded what?
What are they doing?
Nothing, most of them. Spectators at a cricket match, cheering on the home team, offering a bit of advice occasionally. Kind word, bright idea, pat on the back.
Did I have help? Companions like that?
Legions, you were a special project. At one time you had literally 138 angels dancing on the head of your particular pin, but you outlasted them. Eventually they all moved on to more promising projects, axe murderers and the like. Unfortunately, I was stuck.
Well, I never asked for your help, so consider yourself unstuck. If you're so unhappy, go, be gone. I liberate you. Trouble yourself no longer. You're free.
Not so easy, old pudding. I'm here for the duration. I'm yours.
Let's go for a walk. And walk they did through the streets and alleys, sometimes floating above the crowd, sometimes on the ground among them.
And sometimes Marley stopped before a particular face, studying it as if trying to read something written in a foreign tongue.
Once they stopped before a little girl, pretty in pink despite her dirt and cast-off rags, sitting on a step singing to quiet the baby in her arms.
Marley stood before her a good while and was quite surprised when...
She looked up at him and their eyes met. She considered him solemnly for a moment and then returned her attention to the child in her arms.
Marley found this unsettling.
Yep, some of them can see us a little bit, or at least know that we're here.
Marley frowned and was silent. They moved on.
Mark Colson and Rosie Sullivan from Jacob Marley's Christmas Carol. Playing through Sunday at the Williamston Theater. That was pretty heavy. Does it lighten up throughout the course of the presentation? Or
We have our moments, you know. I mean, and also, too, that it's open to kids as well. I don't know how young those kids should be. my kids are all going to see it, but they've grown up around the theater, and so my youngest is 8. So, now,
did you get the impression that the playwright is trying to ape the style of Charles Dickens to some extent? I mean, I did.
Yeah.
What you read seemed, at least in the style of Charles Dickens.
Definitely.
It's not like a 21st century adaptation or anything. He kind of went back to the source.
Yeah, there's a lot of similar language that you hear throughout it, and it definitely, as we were talking about characters in the process, they definitely wanted to have that kind of Oliver Twist feel to the script and to the area or the setting.
Rosie Sullivan and Mark Colson appear through Sunday at the Williamston Theater. The play is Jacob Marley's Christmas Carol. Mark Colson, you've been at this a while. Tell us about your acting journey. I know it started pretty close by.
It did. I think when I was growing up in Charlotte, I was probably the only actor, you know, somebody that sort of went on to, you know, become a professional actor at that point. My parents were obviously really, really supportive. My father was the... minister of the Congregational Church. He was really into the arts and opera, and so I grew up with that. The first play that I ever saw was the Boar's Head Theater, when they had a theater out in Grand Ledge. It was in an old church at the time, and they did a production of Macbeth, and I saw Banquo coming out with an axe in his head, and I was like, I think this
that's for me. you've done a lot of TV, but you've done a lot of everything, it seems. King of Queens, CSI New York, Gilmore Girls, a lot. And you're a associate professor of media acting.
Which is basically sort of a fancy way of saying on-camera acting. Yeah,
how do you juggle?
That's my specialty.
How do you juggle the roles that are obviously produced elsewhere with the gig at Michigan State?
Well, right now I'm going to have a couple of shows coming out in January, and the nice thing about that was that they shot down in Pittsburgh. There's a tremendous amount of production going on there. I wish it was going on in Detroit or here in Michigan, but it's not. And that is a show on Cinemax. It's called Banshee, so that'll be coming out in January. I was lucky lucky enough to get on their final season. And then I'm also doing a brand new show. It's called Outsiders, and that's on WGN America, and that'll be in January as well.
Rosie, you're still in college, so your journey's in its early stages here. Yeah. What do you aspire to?
Well, you know, I'm since I'm a senior, we're doing a senior showcase, and so I'll actually be on during spring break. I'll be going to New York, and I will be doing a song and a scene for a bunch of officials or managers and people like that, important people, I guess,
being,
in New
being
York.
Being seen by
yeah,
people who
essentially
turn things
seen.
Around for you.
Yeah.
What do you dislike about being an actor? There must be something.
We were in my family. We were in Los Angeles for a lot of years, and so it was 19 years for me. And you know, we were dug in. We had a house and all that kind of thing. But it was really just sort of a gypsy lifestyle that you lead, you know. Mm-hmm. And so you are kind of always on the hustle for other jobs. You never really quite trust the acting jobs that you get, you know, because it's really feast or famine. And so, you know, once you get a job that's good, you try to sock that money away, but you're always also kind of still, you know, working on that next job as well. It's just constant hustle.
It seems like memorizing lines constantly would get challenging.
They don't worry about that as much in Hollywood. You know, sometimes the scripts are kind of thrown out a little bit. I mean, with the work that you know, Rosie and I have done in theater, that's when it gets a little bit more serious, because obviously you're doing Shakespeare and you're doing the classics, and you want to be true to those words.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We want to thank both of you. We've been talking with actors Mark Colson and Rosie Sullivan, who are appearing in Jacob Marley's Christmas Carol at the Williamston Theater through Sunday. Let's all thank them for coming out tonight.
Thank you.
Coming up on Current State, if you're looking to try out some new recipes this holiday season, Michigan chef and food writer Maureen Aboud can give you some ideas and maybe more importantly, some inspiration. That's coming up in just a little bit, and she's brought a few of her creations with her, I'm happy to say. First, let's get back to the MSU Children's Choir. This is a piece called Hope is the Thing with Feathers.
Oh.
The MSU Children's Choir. It's called Hope is the Thing with Feathers by Susan Labar. Its current state on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. On our program every week, we highlight organizations that are working to make Lansing a better place. Tonight, we invite you all to join us in supporting St. Vincent Catholic Charities during their Be an Angel holiday drive. After the show, members of our live audience here at WKAR-TV can select an angel tag from our tree. Each tag contains information on a specific item for a child or a family in need, with instructions on where to drop it off, and your gift will help make someone's holiday season brighter. Coming up, glass artist Craig Mitchell Smith was on the verge of giving up on his career when a grant from the Arts Council of Greater Lansing jump-started his work. He does incredible things with glass. We will talk with Craig Mitchell Smith coming up in just a few minutes. A few years ago, writer and chef Maureen Aboud quit her job in Chicago and moved to San Francisco to follow her passion and attend culinary school. She has a recent cookbook called Rosewater and Orange Blossoms and a blog by the same name, which she writes from her current home here in East Lansing. Her work's been published in the Huffington Post, the Chicago Tribune, and the Washington Post, just to name a few. She joins us now to share with us what she's been cooking during the holiday season. Welcome back to the program.
Hi, Mark.
Always nice to see Maureen, because she always brings creations like this here with us, with her. What are the holidays like at your house?
It's all about the food.
Yeah.
And the spirit, of course. But we do make a lot of sweets, and try to balance that out with some other healthful cuisine, which my specialty being Lebanese cuisine, that's not too hard to do because everything we make has a healthy spin on it. Some of the sweets, however, veer into the butter.
See, now I'm led to believe that baklava, if you're going to indulge in something really sweet, there are worse things to have than a piece of baklava, or am I wrong?
You are so right. You've got to
go for it. I was right waiting for wrong. But.
And the Lebanese version, pronounced betlewa, is slightly different from the Greek baklava. But it is similar in that it is a phyllo dough and nut pastry laden with butter and aromatic syrup that's flavored with flower water, orange flower water in the Lebanese style.
And what in the way of nuts do you have in the betlewa?
Betlewa can be made with any kind of nut. Right here we have the traditional classic walnut filling.
Okay.
And I like to toast my walnuts in advance, so it gives it just more flavor. But cashews, pistachios, almonds, they're all delicious in betlewa.
And honey?
Honey is more classically Greek, but you can use the honey in the syrup. But the Lebanese make a simple syrup. It's water and sugar, a little bit of lemon juice, and then it's flavored with orange blossom water, and that gives this its distinct flavor. It's really delicious.
You've named your book, the title of your book includes orange blossoms.
Yes.
Is that a common scent, or what do I want to say?
A common flavoring, absolutely.
Flavoring, sure.
Rose water and orange blossoms. I love the sound of that. Isn't it charming? I mean, I just love those flavorings. They're so aromatic and they're so classically Lebanese. And to use them, you have to be judicious. Use them sparingly. It's not the idea of getting a perfumey flavor, but just something aromatic that brings out the flavor of the other things that they're in.
We're talking with chef and writer Maureen Aboud about some of her favorite recipes here for the holiday season. I heard about your recipe for stuffed dates, and they sound pretty fantastic. How do you make those?
The almond stuffed dates with sea salt and lime zest. This is one of my favorite recipes in the book. I've made it for almost every demonstration I've done because everyone loves these, and they're so simple. You get the beautiful, big, tender medjool dates, which are in Meyer. You can get them everywhere. Nature's Delight is my favorite brand. And get them with the pits removed, or remove the pit. It's very simple to do. They're soft. You just open them up and pull the pit out and put in two roasted salted almonds and close it back up. Now make sure that your guest knows that that's an almond and not a pit inside the date. And then saute them gently, a little bit of olive oil, just very briefly to warm them up. And this really just brings out that delicious caramel-like flavor. I think of dates as nature's caramel. And anyone who thinks they don't like dates will change their mind. Mm-hmm. After it's topped with a little bit of sea salt and lime zest, a very unique combination and really sophisticated, simple to serve. You can get the dates stuffed in advance, keep them in your fridge, and then when guests stop by, you're ready. And you have this really delicious treat to serve them with tea or a glass of wine.
As a little gift for everybody in our audience here at WKAR-TV, we have this recipe from Maureen's cookbook available for you to take home after the show. So we're talking with Maureen Aboud, chef and writer, about some of her favorite recipes here for the holiday season. You see cookies everywhere at the holiday. If you're lucky, you see cookies everywhere at the holiday season. Tell me about the Lebanese cookie. This is called a gribi?
Gribi cookie, which is a straightforward butter cookie, but it becomes something much more with the way that we make it, with the clarified butter, and it's whipped and just a flour, confectioner's sugar, very few ingredients, and it just melts in your mouth, and you bake it just until it's set. This is not a browned cookie in any way, and I like everything golden brown, but this particular cookie is just a pale white, very, very crumbly and delicious. I mean, this cookie, you top it with some powdered sugar, and it can take any flavoring, orange blossom water, rose water, vanilla, nothing at all. You can almond. It's just a really versatile cookie. You could dip half of it into chocolate as well. That's a really wonderful, yeah. If you're a chocoholic like I am, you're going
to
want
adding chocolate to just about anything works.
It does,
right?
Work.
Talk to us more about butter, though, too, because talk about a universal ingredient. You love butter. You write about your love for fresh butter on your blog, and you even have your own recipe for fresh cultured butter. Tell us what makes cultured butter special.
Butter is remarkably easy to make yourself. I was surprised to discover this. And I always knew that when you whip cream, if you go too far, it turns into curds, and then ultimately it turns into butter. Well, if you use excellent, exceptional cream, heavy cream from a local creamery ideally, and inject that or stir into it a little bit of cultured yogurt, or the Lebanese use Luban, this and let it sit for a day, this then gives that cream character. And it's called European butter because in Europe they don't treat their milk the way we do and basically remove all the flavor is what we do. So their milk sits out and it gains character, a little bit of tartness, a little bit of flavor. So once you do that, you then just whip the cream as though you're making whipped cream and keep going, and then you see the golden curds form in your mixer. And also it separates from the buttermilk. And this is wonderful too. So the buttermilk can be used for anything you would cook buttermilk with or just drink it. It's so delicious. But get that separated from the curds, and then you can put the butter on some parchment and roll it up and a little bit of sea salt in there again, and then slice it, and you have these beautiful rounds of fresh homemade butter. If you bake bread or buy good bread, this is heavenly. Hmm.
On your blog, you recommend using browned butter when making chocolate chip cookies. Tell us about that, and why do you recommend that?
Browned butter is basically, butter has solids in it, and the solids, when you cook the butter, just heat it, the butter solids become browned and toasty, and it lends a kind of toffee-like flavor and scent to the butter. And in a chocolate chip cookie whose basis is really a toffee-like flavor, the browned butter goes a long way toward deliciousness. And it also is excellent over pasta, over steamed vegetables. And so, but when we make this betlewa, you want to get those solids out of the butter that's used in that. So we clarify the butter. Again, melting it at a low temperature, you see the solids separating from the butter fat, and then just pour the clarified butter off and you have the solids left, and you can use those to brown them or get rid of them. But then that clarified butter is key for other pastries.
I've been given permission to sample one item that you brought.
I was hoping you were going to sample something.
I'm a cookie fiend. Could I try one of the cookies?
Absolutely. This is the Lebanese bitlewa.
This is the bitlewa.
Fresh today. Yes.
Oh, my.
You hear the crisp. That means it was successful.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. I recommend it. Well, we've been focusing on the sweet tooth. Tell us real quickly about the hummus that you make. I know you got your own recipe for hummus.
I'm glad we have time to mention the hummus, because anytime you're eating all this other lusciousness, you want to have something healthy but equally delicious. Homemade hummus is a game changer for any kind of hummus that you can buy. And when you make your hummus with a peeled chickpea, with fresh garlic, with excellent olive oil and really good smooth tahini that isn't bitter, you have a whole different program with the hummus. It gets very, very smooth. The flavor is so much better once the skins are off the chickpeas. And I was so into this once I discovered how much better the hummus is once the skins are off the chickpeas that I went feverishly sourcing a pre-skinned chickpea, because to get those skins off takes some doing. And so now I'm selling them at MaureenAboudMarket.com. Peeled chickpeas. Yeah, they're wonderful, and I highly recommend them. And I really recommend making that hummus at home. It's a delicious starter. You can make it and keep it in your fridge in an airtight container, and then, again, it's ready to go. But I don't put the olive oil in the mix with the hummus. I put it over top when I serve it, and it gets a nice, real generous with your special olive oil. That's what it's made for. Right over top. Serve it with vegetables, with pita chips, and it's really healthful and really flavorful.
Remind us of the website one more time, MaureenAboud.com.
MaureenAboud.com. And you can get the peeled chickpeas and many other wonderful Lebanese ingredients at MaureenAboudMarket.com.
We've been speaking with Michigan chef Maureen Aboud about some great Lebanese-inspired dishes to make during the holidays. Let's give Maureen a round of applause. Thank you for joining us. Let's get back to the MSU Children's Choir now. They are our featured performers here on our live holiday special on Current State, streaming live right now on WKAR.org. It's the duet and chorale from Cantata No. 93 by Bach. Violin accompanist is Pamela Buravac.
Yeah, sure.
The MSU Children's Choir singing the duet and chorale from Cantata No. 93 by J.S. Bach, violin accompaniment by Pamela Burovac. Coming up in just a little bit, I'll speak with Kyle Zoik, director of the MSU Children's Choir, about the music we've been hearing tonight and more about their activities. I'm Mark Bayshore. It's Current State. Lansing-based artist Craig Mitchell Smith started out as a painter, but in 2006 he discovered the medium of glass. A longtime gardener, Smith has always found inspiration in the beauty of nature. His works can often be found in botanical gardens where they fit in with their surroundings. Still, it was tough to be a full-time artist when the recession hit, and he was close to giving up on his dream career. That's when a grant from the Arts Council of Greater Lansing gave him the head of steam he needed. Now he's giving back. Craig Mitchell Smith is here with the story of his work and remarkable career. Welcome to Current State.
Thank you for having me.
I spent a good half hour today watching videos on HGTV when they came to Lansing to film your backyard and all of the creations that you had put together in your backyard. And I recommend everybody and everybody listening do that as well, because you put together a little paradise.
It's on my YouTube channel. I had been making glass for 9 weeks when they flew out a crew to film it.
Wow. That's quite a career trajectory.
Yeah, all been a kind of what the heck kind of thing.
Tell our listeners and our audience here how exactly you've used glass to help landscape your property. How do you go about that?
Well, everything I do, I want integrated into the gardens or into the landscapes that I'm working. And I have a mid-century modern home, and I wanted art for my own garden. And yet, if I put a concrete nymph in my garden, it seems like it would spit it out. So I wanted some really contemporary work, and I couldn't find anything that spoke to me. So I started making glass, and then immediately I was in contact with HGTV, and they saw the work, and I literally bought a kiln and had been making glass for 9 weeks. So all that work that you see on the YouTube channel HGTV episode was made in a period of 9 weeks.
I found it interesting, though, because you've made it clear that nature has been an inspiration for you your whole life.
My whole life.
I mean, kind of an obsession.
I've been a gardener my whole life. It's the source of my solace, is to simply go outside.
What's most challenging about working in this medium?
It breaks. It's fragile. In my artist statement, which I worked a long time on, I say, I love glass for the metaphors of the human condition. When it's warm, it's malleable. When it's cold, it's brittle. It's at its best, it's colorful and transparent. And that's what I think people should try and be, too.
Is it which is the bigger challenge, Craig? Is it more of a challenge to stay creative? Or is it, are the technical challenges really bigger challenges?
It's really both. What I love about glass, once I found glass, is it's perfect for my brain. It's a synthesis of my love of beauty and of science. There's a huge amount of science involved in what I do. I actually have to understand the mass, the gravity, the surface tension, the viscosity, the temperature, and the time at which it's held. So it's putting together both these things. I'll have an idea in my head, but getting there is quite a different matter.
It's very interesting to look back, because I know the recession had a dramatic impact on your livelihood. How close were you to leaving art behind?
Oh, I thought, you know, I started making glass in 2006, and I was having some success. I was gotten in a museum with my work, and I was selling some work. I was taking care of myself. And then when the economy crashed in 2008, I think I went 102 days without a single sale. And I thought, well, that was a really nice run. I think I'll go move to Portland, Oregon, and be a waiter, because I didn't know what other skills I had. And then my life changed when the Arts Council gave me this $1,000 grant. And I used that money to go wholesale and be able to buy glass at a better price. And the grant what they said they wanted was something that would benefit your community. So I decided to do an exhibition of my glass at Lansing's Cooley Gardens. And I said anything that sells, I would donate 25% to Cooley Gardens. And I opened this up to the public, and much to my surprise, we had a sell-out show, and 600 people came for a one-day exhibition. And so that's what started this trajectory. 6 months later, I did a show at Dow Gardens, and then it turned into a show at Michigan State University, and then Norfolk Botanic Gardens, and then it turned into Minnesota, Minnesota Landscape Arboretum. Then I did a show for the Stan Hewitt. I opened in 7 weeks in Omaha, Nebraska, and in 2017, I'm doing a show that is four times the size of anything I have done for Missouri Botanical Garden.
So you are back. You know, it, to a degree that you probably never envisioned
who saw
in
this coming?
2008, no. 2009, thereabouts. I know the Arts Council of Greater Lansing recently gave you one of its applause awards. And ironically, get this, Craig designed the award, okay? He designed the award and without knowing that he was going to end up being one of the recipients of the award. And at their holiday glitter event to receive the award, you told the story of how much that grant, what a difference that made, what it meant to you. And you're giving the money back.
Yes. So it was Giving Tuesday that the Arts Council Awards were given out. And I didn't know until quite late in the day that I was receiving one of the awards. I donate these awards. I've made them for years and donate them. And then I found out quite late that I'm actually receiving one. And I thought it was a perfect opportunity then to give back the grant money that the Arts Council gave to me in hopes that it changes someone else's life in the way it changed mine.
Where, and now you've mentioned a few places you've shown your work. I understand you have a connection to Sri Lanka.
We just
tell us about that.
This was pretty cool. I did. I was the featured artist for. I did Epcot Center for 2 years, and I did a big display of poppies to publicize the Great and Powerful Oz movie in 2012. And then in 2013, I did the entrance of Epcot Center, and a Sri Lankan businessman became aware of my work through what I had done at Disney, and he said he recognized the spirit behind the work. And so we, one of his people, called us and asked if we'd be willing to teach how I make glass in Sri Lanka. And I said, well, sure, but you don't have a studio for that. So they allowed me to design my dream studio. They built it in an abandoned casino in Colombo, Sri Lanka, that this man owns. He consolidated down from four casinos to three. And he built this studio that I designed. It all shipped from the West Coast. And then my two glassmakers, Sherry Tanike and Jane Lediver, and I flew through the Middle East to Sri Lanka. And we were scheduled for 2 weeks of glassmaking. And it went so well, they extended the trip for a month. So we got to spend a month in the beautiful, beautiful country of Sri Lanka.
What a roller coaster ride you have been on the past 10 years.
I didn't see this coming.
How about that? Glass artist Craig Mitchell Smith works out of a studio in Old Town Lansing. He recently was named a winner of an Arts Council of Greater Lansing Applause Award. Congratulations. What's your website? Is it CraigMitchellSmith.com?
CraigMitchellSmith.com.
I strongly recommend you check it out. Craig is responsible for some incredible work. Let's hear a round of applause for Craig Mitchell Smith. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's get back to the MSU Children's Choir here to sing for us again. The name of this is Still, 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 arranged by Ken Berg with flute accompaniment by Nicholas Bonani.
Sleeping.
The MSU Children's Choir singing Still, 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 arranged by Ken Berg. Flute accompanist was Nicholas Bonani. For more than 20 years, the Children's Choir has been a very bright spot on the area's arts landscape. A part of the MSU Community Music School, the Children's Choir invites Lansing kids ages 10 to 16 and gives them a chance not only to perform but to enhance their musical education in the process. In the recent past, it's performed with the Detroit Symphony Orchestra, Marilyn Horn, and Peter Nero, and the ensemble can even point to sharing in two Grammy Awards back in 2006 with the DSO and Pulitzer Prize-winning composer William Balcom. We welcome Kyle Zoik, the director of the MSU Children's Choir. Welcome, Kyle.
Thank you.
The group sounds wonderful. And Katie Sundin is also a performer in the choir. Welcome, Katie.
Hello.
This is the you direct a far larger group of vocalists as well at the Community Music School and at MSU, I guess. Break that down for us.
That's right. So the MSU Children's Choir has historically been kind of the staple group of the Community Music School. They've been around for over 20 years. And over that time, the need for more choirs has arisen. So there's actually five choirs, starting with ages actually as early as seven. We start a choir called Cantabile. Then there's CMS Singers, which is for a little bit older singers, the MSU Children's Choir, which is mostly fifth to ninth graders, and then there's a young men's chorus, Changed Voices and High School Men, and a young women's chorus, which is high school women. So I conduct all of those throughout the week. It's a each choir meets once a week, and then this group here meets every other Saturday as well. So it's mostly an afternoon, evening, and weekend type of thing.
And who are the kids in this choir? Who are we hearing? How old are they?
These are middle school age students. Some are in fifth. There's a few in ninth grade, but most of them are in that sixth to eighth grade range. Most of them had been in one of the other CMS choirs that prepared them to be in this choir. They're exceptional musicians, and we have really high expectations for them.
Katie, you're a singer and an instrumentalist too, I understand.
Yes.
What else do you do besides sing?
I like to perform in theater, and I play French horn also.
You're a French horn player?
Yes.
And you attend school where?
Williamston Middle School.
Would you say you are a better horn player or a better singer?
I think I'm equally, because choir helps me with horn, and horn helps me with choir.
That was my next question. I mean, do you feel the impact of one on the other? They do play off each other.
Yeah, then. Definitely. Choir has helped me learn to match pitch on horn, and horn has helped me to, well, do the same thing in choir almost, except tuning and just blending with other people.
Kyle, is it fair to say that in a setting like this that you are molding singers? I'm curious, it crossed my mind today, how many members of the children's choir have gone on to careers in singing? Do we know that?
You know, I don't know that number. This is only my third year as the director, and so I'm just now starting to see the effects of that, and a lot of our high school singers are going on to sing in college, which is very exciting. And so it's very exciting to be a part of their musical journey while they're with us.
What is the children's choir role in the Mid-Michigan performance community? How often do you perform? Where?
Well, we have our two main concerts, one in the fall, one in the spring, and then we're often invited to do these unique and special performances. We've done, in the past 2 years, we've been with the DSO again. We did a version of Tosca with them, a concert version of that. It was very fun. We were in La Boheme with the MSU Opera. We'll be joining the MSU Orchestra this spring, and we'll be singing the treble parts to the Symphony of Psalms, which will be a very exciting and challenging work to do.
The ensemble goes back to 1993. Are you only the second director of the ensemble then?
I'm the third director. There was one person in between myself and the founder, Mary Alice Stolick. And Mary Alice has become a good friend. I respect the work that she does and have became a really good friend that can ask questions to her. And she's taken the role to kind of guide me, which has been wonderful.
She really put this group on the map.
She sure did.
That is to be sure.
She sure did.
We're talking with Kyle Zoik, the director of the MSU Children's Choir, along with Katie Sundin, who attends school in Williamston and is a singer in the ensemble. Did you grow up in a musical family, Katie?
No, not really. I mean, my mom plays an instrument, but no, not particularly.
And explain to me, how does it break? I mean, I'm accustomed to SATB, soprano, alto, tenor, bass. How does it break down with a group this age?
With these singers, we're mostly doing SSA, three-part music. Some of the music is only two-part, like the duet that we sang earlier today. It was just S and A, soprano, alto. But some things that we do breaks into four parts. So each of the singers really has to be versatile and has to practice staying on their own part and really maintaining that independence while being in the larger group.
Do you like performing, Katie?
Yes, I do.
Do you like, and what group are you a member of when you play your horn?
I'm part of the Williamson Middle School Band.
Okay. Well, talk to us about the recording you've been working on. Who's involved? Whose works are you recording?
So we just finished recording. It'll be the 12th recording in the history of this program. The thing that makes this special is it's the first time that we have included all 200 singers. So the 7-year-olds all the way through the high school age singers are part of the CD. And the CD is going to be entitled We Are One. And that is the title of the piece that was commissioned for the record. So last Saturday, we had all 200 of these singers in Fairchild Theater, and we recorded all day long. We've got 12 tracks in the make right now. And in May, we'll release this record.
Are you a singer as well?
I am. Yeah, I'm a singer.
Okay. Are you an instrumentalist?
When I was younger, I played the saxophone.
Okay.
But once I started undergraduate, I was purely singing.
Katie, who were the biggest musical influences on you?
My piano teacher in elementary school, who was also the music teacher at school, she really got me into starting music and joining choir, and she's just been a huge influence on me.
Well, you have sounded great here tonight. We really appreciate your being with us here tonight and coming over and talking a little bit more about this. What's the last song you'll be playing for us this evening?
We're going to have a lot of fun on the last one. We're going to do Jingle Bell Swing.
Jingle Bell Swing. I'll let you make your way back to the risers here. We've been speaking with Kyle Zoik, director of the MSU Children's Choir, and choir member Katie Sundin. We want to thank WKAR-TV station manager Susie Elkins, executive producer Tim Zico, production supervisor Ken Murley, director Tim Elkins, and their crew for all of the hard work here tonight. It's not that often that the radio stations and the TV stations get together and create something new, but we did this time. We have all of them and all of their crews to thank. Also, big thanks to our current state team. Katie Cook was invaluable putting this together tonight, but big thanks as well to April Van Buren, Scott Pohl, Kevin Lavery, Jamie Paisley, and to Drew Hill. Our executive producer is Peter Worf. The show will re-air Wednesday morning at 9. We hope you can join us. We want to wish everybody happy holidays here from everybody at WKAR. And we hope you enjoy it. And let's all pray for some snow, I guess, too. Now, with the MSU Children's Choir, they'll close it out with the Jingle Bell Swing.
Jingle bells, doobie doo dee dee doo doo. Jingle, bells, jingle, jingle, all the way. Oh, what fun it is to sing a jingle bell jubilee.